The following is a review of the portfolio management principles designed to address the learning outcome statements set forth by CFA Institute. This topic is also covered in Basics of Portfolio Planning and Construction. The first LOS asks us to describe the reasons for a written investment policy statement, or IPS. An investment manager is very unlikely to produce a good result for a client without understanding that client's needs, circumstances, and constraints. A written investment policy statement will typically begin with the investor's goals in terms of risk and return. These should be determined jointly, as the goals of high returns and low risk, while quite popular, are likely to be mutually exclusive in practice. Investor expectations in terms of returns must be compatible with investors' tolerance for risk or uncertainty about portfolio performance. The next LOS is to describe the major components of an IPS. The major components of an IPS typically address the following: description of client circumstances, situation, and investment objectives, statement of the purpose of the IPS, statement of duties and responsibilities of investment manager, custodian of assets, and the client, procedures to update IPS and to respond to various possible situations, investment objectives derived from communication with the client, investment constraints that must be considered in the plan, investment guidelines such as how the policy will be executed, asset types permitted, and leverage to be used, evaluation of performance, the benchmark portfolio for evaluating investment performance and other information on evaluation of investment results, and appendices containing information on strategic or baseline asset allocation and permitted deviations from policy portfolio allocations, as well as how and when the portfolio allocations should be rebalanced. In any case, the IPS will, at a minimum, contain a clear statement of client circumstances and constraints, an investment strategy based on these, and some benchmark against which to evaluate the account performance. Our next LOS is to describe risk and return objectives and how they may be developed for a client. The risk objectives in an IPS may take several forms. An absolute risk objective might be to have no decrease in portfolio value during any 12-month period, or to not decrease in value by more than 2% at any point over any 12-month period. Low absolute percentage risk objectives such as these may result in portfolios made up of securities that offer guaranteed returns, such as U.S. Treasury bills. Absolute risk objectives can also be stated in terms of the probability of specific portfolio results, either percentage losses or dollar losses, rather than strict limits on portfolio results. Examples are as follows. No greater than a 5% probability of returns below negative 5% in any 12-month period. Or no greater than a 4% probability of a loss of more than $20,000 over any 12-month period. An absolute return objective may be stated in nominal terms, such as an overall return of at least 6% per annum, or in real terms, such as a return of 3% more than the annual inflation rate each year. Relative risk objectives relate to a specific benchmark and can also be strict, such as returns will not be less than 12-month Euro LIBOR over any 12-month period, or stated in terms of probability, such as no greater than a 5% probability of returns more than 4% below the return on the MSCI World Index over any 12-month period. Return objectives can be relative to a benchmark portfolio return, such as exceed the return on the S&P 500 index by 2% per year. For a bank, the return objective may be relative to the bank's cost of funds, its deposit rate. While it is possible for an institution to use returns on peer portfolios, such as an endowment with a stated objective to be in the top quartile of endowment fund returns, peer performance benchmarks suffer from not being investable portfolios. There's no way to match this investment return by portfolio construction before the fact. In any event, the account manager must make sure that the stated risk and return objectives are compatible, given the reality of expected investment results and uncertainty over time. The next LOS is to distinguish between the willingness and the ability or capacity to take risk in analyzing an investor's financial risk tolerance. An investor's ability to bear risk depends on financial circumstances. Longer investment horizons, greater assets versus liabilities, more insurance against unexpected occurrences, and a secured job all suggest a greater ability to bear investment risk in terms of uncertainty about periodic investment performance. An investor's willingness to bear risk is based primarily on the investor's attitudes and beliefs about investments in various asset types. The assessment of an investor's attitude about risk is quite subjective and is sometimes done with a short questionnaire that attempts to categorize the investor's risk aversion or risk tolerance. When the advisor's assessment of an investor's ability and willingness to take investment risk are compatible, there is no real problem selecting an appropriate level of investment risk. If the investor's willingness to take on investment risk is high, but the investor's ability to take on risk is low, the low ability to take on investment risk will prevail in the advisor's assessment. In situations where ability is high but willingness is low, the advisor may attempt to educate the investor about investment risk and correct any misconceptions that may be contributing to the investor's low stated willingness to take on investment risk. However, the advisor's job is not to change the investor's personality characteristics that contribute to a low willingness to take on investment risk. The approach will most likely be to conform to the lower of the investor's ability or willingness to bear risk, as constructing a portfolio with a level of risk that the client is clearly uncomfortable with will not likely lead to a good outcome in the investor's view. The next LOS is to describe the investment constraints of liquidity, time horizon, tax concerns, legal and regulatory factors, and unique circumstances, and their implications for the choice of portfolio assets. Investment constraints include the investor's liquidity needs, the time horizon, tax considerations, legal and regulatory constraints, and unique needs and preferences. We will begin with liquidity. Liquidity refers to the ability to turn investment assets into spendable cash in a short period of time without having to make significant price concessions to do so. Investor needs for money to pay tuition, to pay for a parent's assisted living expenses, or to fund other possible spending needs may all require that some liquid assets be held. As we noted in an earlier topic review discussing property and casualty insurance companies, claims arrive unpredictably to some extent, and therefore their portfolios must hold a significant proportion of liquid or maturing securities in order to be prepared to honor these claims. Illiquid investments in hedge funds and private equity funds, which typically are not traded and have restrictions on redemptions, are not suitable for an investor who may unexpectedly need access to the funds. Next, we will look at time horizon. In general, the longer an investor's time horizon, the more risk and less liquidity the investor can accept in the portfolio. While the expected returns on a broad equities portfolio may not be too risky for an investor with a 20-year investment horizon, they likely are too risky for an investor who must fund a large purchase at the end of this year. For such an investor, government securities or a bank certificate of deposit may be the most appropriate investments because of their low risk and high liquidity at the time when the funds will be needed. The next constraint is an investor's tax concerns. Besides an individual's overall tax rate, the tax treatment of various types of investment accounts is also a consideration in portfolio construction. For a fully taxable account, investors subject to higher tax rates may prefer tax-free bonds to taxable bonds, or prefer equities that are expected to produce capital gains, which are often taxed at a lower rate than other types of income. A focus on expected after-tax returns over time in relation to risk should correctly account for differences in tax treatments as well as investors' overall tax rates. Some types of investment accounts, such as retirement accounts, may be tax-exempt or tax-deferred. Investors with such accounts may choose to put securities that generate fully taxed income, such as corporate bond interest, in accounts that are tax-deferred, while seeking long-term capital gains, tax-exempt interest income, and dividend income in jurisdictions where dividends receive preferential tax treatment in their personal accounts, which have no tax deferral benefit. Next, we will look at legal and regulatory constraints. In addition to financial market regulations that apply to all investors, more specific legal and regulatory constraints may apply to particular investors. Trust, corporate, and qualified investment accounts may all be restricted by law from investing in particular types of securities and assets. There may also be restrictions on percentage allocations to specific types of investments in such accounts. Corporate officers and directors face legal restrictions on trading in the securities of their firms that the account manager should be aware of. Finally, there are an investor's unique circumstances. Each investor, whether individual or institutional, may have specific preferences or restrictions on which securities and assets may be purchased for the account. Ethical preferences, such as prohibiting investment in securities issued by tobacco or firearms producers, are not uncommon. Restrictions on investments in companies or countries where human rights abuses are suspected or documented would also fall into this category. Religious preferences may preclude investment in securities that make explicit interest payments. Unique investor preferences may also be based on diversification needs when the investor's income depends heavily on the prospects for one company or industry. An investor who has founded or runs a company may not want any investment in securities issued by a competitor to that company.